You've written your manuscript or screenplay. You've polished it as best you can. Now it's time to send it out in the world. And to do that, you're going to need to write a query letter. So what makes a great query letter? I'll discuss that with writer Katie Beebe today on The Narrative Breakdown.
Narrative Breakdown. Narrative Breakdown. Narrative Breakdown.
Hello, and welcome to The Narrative Breakdown. I'm Cheryl Klein, and I am delighted to have as my guest today, Katie Beebe. Hi, Katie.
Hi, everybody.
Katie is the author of Brother Hugo and the Bear, a wonderful new picture book just out from Erdmann's, illustrated by S.D. Schindler. Katie, could you tell us a little bit about the book?
Brother Hugo and the Bear is about a book, a bear, a monk, and friendship. Brother Hugo has a problem on his hands. The library book he was meant to return at the start of Lent was actually eaten by a bear. And in order to make it up, he has to make a replacement copy, all the while being trailed by his new friend, the bear, who would like just one more taste, because to the bear, letters are truly sweeter than honey. But Brother Hugo worries that he won't be able to make a whole new book on his own. And he finds, through the help of his brother monks, that he actually can. And yet, all is not over, because he still has to return the copy. And who's waiting for him outside the monastery but a bear who truly has acquired a taste for letters?
Very nice. And you came to this story from being a professor of medieval history, right?
I do, and it's actually based on a real letter in Latin from the 12th century, where one abbot writes to another saying, "Thank you for loaning us your copy of the letters of St. Augustine. By the way, can we borrow that again? Because ours has been eaten by a bear." And in the Latin, it actually says, "Comedit ursus," eaten by a bear. And I thought that would make a great story, and I wanted to find out more. And there wasn't any more, so I realized I had to write that story myself.
So when did your book come out, Katie?
It came out just this past April in 2014, after you and I had been talking about this story for about 10 years, I think, ever since I was in graduate school.
Now, when did this book come out?
Brother Hugo and the Bear was published just this past April in 2014, but I had been working on it for about 10 years and actually talking it over with you for about as long as that.
Yes, I should pause and note here that Katie was my college sweetmeat and roommate and is still my dearest friend. So I've known this story for a very long time, and I've watched its progress into publication with great delight. And you have two more books under contract, right?
I do. One is about a boy's first day at school in ancient Egypt, and the second is a kind of a father-baby book set on the London Penzance overnight train in England, and both are scheduled to come out with Erdmann's.
In the near future. So
yes.
Yes. And all of this lovely publication success started with a query letter, correct?
That's true.
Yes. And so we are going to talk a little bit today, and Katie wrote a really, really great query letter, I should say, that we are going to talk about. And we're going to talk about what query letters are in general and take you through both what I think of as an evil query letter and then Katie's good query letter. And we will discuss these, and hopefully you all can pick up tips about what editors and agents are looking for in query letters and what we hope to see. So, as an editor, I have looked at a lot of query letters in my life, mostly on unsolicited projects, books that don't necessarily have an agent. Maybe I've met the author at a writer's conference. Maybe they've just come into our open/pile, whatever it is. And I always enjoy looking at them, actually, because every query letter is a great new opportunity to meet somebody. Like, both to meet an author who I might want to work with, and to meet a character I might fall in love with, or a story I might come to adore. And so I really do think of a query letter as an introduction, first of all. And I hope that you will think of it, too, that you are just making your introduction to me of both, when I say you, I'm referring to writers in general, of yourself and your manuscript. And you're putting yourself forward in your best light, as you would if, you know, we were just meeting at a party or something like that. And as part of that great introduction, I really want to see a compelling description of the story and the scope of the story, how long it is, what your ambitions are, things like that. Were you intimidated when you were coming to write a query letter, Katie? Like, what were your emotions approaching it?
It is a bit intimidating because it's your one chance, you think, to grab an editor's attention. And I think what I found the most difficult part was to encapsulate my entire story in just a few lines.
Even though your story was just a few thousand words.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You think, how can I put it in an even smaller format and in a way that will really stand out?
So, and it is a challenging thing. I do not deny that. But we are going to talk about that a little bit here today. And we're going to discuss it using, like I said, what I think of as an evil query letter. And this is actually a query letter that you wrote for me.
That's true. Both query letters that we're discussing today are ones that I've written. So it's a good idea to keep in mind we all have within us an evil and a good query letter.
And please, please develop your good side and not your evil.
Use your powers for good.
That's right. And in fact, the way that you came to write the query letter, if I remember correctly, I think basically I just complained a lot. And then Katie took all of my least favorite things and wrote them into this one letter. Katie, you want to do the honors of reading this terrible, terrible thing?
To begin, Cheryl Klein, Wendy Lamb Books. Dear Cheryl.
I want to pause here and note that Cheryl is spelled in this letter S-H-E-R-Y-L-C-L-I-N-E. My name is spelled C-H-E-R-Y-L-K-L-E-I-N. And I work for Arthur A. Levine Books, not Wendy Lamb Books, even though I very much admire Wendy Lamb Books. But I would still go ahead and read the query letter. Other editors or agents might be a bit less forgiving. Proofread your work. This is the takeaway. And you also said, Dear Cheryl, even though I said this is an introduction, and I do think of it as a fairly friendly thing, it is still a piece of business correspondence. And in business correspondence, with somebody you don't know, you start out by calling them Dear Mr. or Dear Miss blank. And so I'd appreciate the respect of being called Ms. Klein. I hope I don't sound too uptight throughout the course of this. Okay, let's carry on.
Thanks for talking with me on the phone. When Art said that at that conference that he would love to publish my book, I was very pleased. He said, Wizard Magic High would be great for you and earn lots of money. It's sort of like that book, Harry Potter, written by a woman from England. Have you heard of her?
Those last two lines about Harry Potter were actual lines from an actual query letter, I swear to God, which we received in, I think, 2002. Or, no, I must have told you about this, so it must have been 2001. I think that still resides in my sort of classic letters drawer, because I do keep a classic letters drawer at work, or a classic letters file. It doesn't quite fill up a drawer.
You should do your research.
And then when Art said at that conference that he would love to publish my book, I was very pleased. Like, that was sort of presuming an intimacy that I think she would expect me to be impressed by. But I, in fact, because I did actually know Arthur, I would know that nobody calls him Art. So again, that felt a little bit much. And at that conference, it's very useful if you've met an editor at a conference to say what conference you met them at. Editors can attend a lot of conferences, and that just helps us put our brains in the right context as we're reading your letter. Wizard Magic High. If we were already publishing one enormously successful wizard series, I don't know that we would want to necessarily do a second one. And then what really lifted my eyebrows here was that Wizard Magic High would be great for you and earn lots of money. And of course, you know, we as publishers, we really want our books to earn lots of money. Lots of money is great. That's how we keep our jobs. It's how authors become successful. Definitely that's our goal. But at Arthur A. Levine Books, we also really prize the art of the manuscript and the art of the story and the art of the illustration and everything else that goes into it. So I also don't believe that Arthur would have said that something would be great for us and earn lots of money. This writer is demonstrating values that are different from the values that our imprint espouses. And again, this sort of comes back to do your research, to know what this house is like, to know what they're looking for, to know the way that they talk about their books and what they value about their books. Katie, your book is actually published by Erdmans, which is a small house based out of Michigan, correct?
It is.
And how did you find them or select them to send your manuscript to?
Well, I looked at a lot of books both in the library and in currently being published. And I was looking for books that had a similar flavor to mine, not ones that would reproduce what I'm trying to do, but books that I think the people who published them would like in the same way that they might like my story. I was looking for a kind of a taste of an editor by comparing lots. And it helps that you had known and met the publisher. Uh-huh. And you suggested that I actually look out for Erdmans, because they do publish a lot of historical, medieval, religious books, all of which my manuscript could fit into those categories.
And in fact, they actually like go to religious and medieval conferences, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They're at the famous medieval conference in Kalamazoo, Michigan, every year.
Yeah.
Which is just the sort of audience who will read my book.
I mean, yeah, you're going to get those general bookstores, but then you know that they have that special reach into those specific audiences who would be interested in a book about a medieval monk and such.
Right, which is not all publishing houses.
Which is not all publishing houses, yeah. Like, at a bigger publishing house like mine, we might need, like, something that has wider appeal, frankly, than a medieval monk. No offense to you.
None taken.
So I think Erdmans was a perfect fit for you. Like, I thought that even before the book was published. And I was right, and I'm happy. So we're going to get back to the evil letter here.
Okay. I want you to know that I would be very happy to make any changes to my book, if you find anything you want to change.
This is another line that would make me cringe, I have to say, just because when I'm looking at query letters, I expect, when I take on an editorial project, I expect to work with the author very much. The author will continue to do their best work to make this the most satisfying book for everyone involved. So this line just seems a little bit unnecessary to me. Like, yes, you might have to make further revisions. You don't need to tell me that you are happy to make them. Because if you aren't happy to make them, I guess if you aren't happy to make them, that would actually be useful to know. Because that would be a sign that I probably don't want to work with you.
Part of the reason why you're sending your manuscript to an editor is because you are happy to make changes. And if not, then you might look into self-publishing.
That's right. That's a great option for people who do not want to revise at this point. So let's continue with this letter.
I'm currently working on the screenplay. I'm sending along my book as an email attachment, and I would be happy if you could get to it quickly.
Oh, goodness. I'm currently working on the screenplay means that you're sort of working ahead of the book. And the only thing I can help you with right now is the book. So let's just talk about the book. That's the way I feel when I look at queries like this. I'm sending along my book as an email attachment. What would irritate me about that is that I specifically do not want attachments. And it says so in our query letter guidelines. Please follow anybody's guidelines, whatever they are.
That's another part of the research I did, was to look at the submission guidelines for Erdmans and give them exactly what they asked for. That's part of being professional.
Absolutely. And you want to bring this thing home?
Thanks again, Missy Snodgrass, my alter ego.
Your evil alter ego. Your evil
P.S.
self.
A lot of other publishers are also reading it now, and if we could get the book published by my birthday next April, that would be magical.
Emoticon, swink. So the thanks also there was spelled with an X again. And a lot of other publishers are reading it now. It is nice to know when a manuscript is out on simultaneous submission versus an exclusive submission. You could just say, this is a simultaneous submission. You don't have to say anything more than that. We totally understand what that means.
But some publishers will not accept simultaneous submissions.
Yeah, although I think that rule has sort of changed over time. Like, just because so many people submit so widely and there's so many publishers available now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But getting the book published by next April. Katie, when did you actually sell Brother Hugo and the Bear?
I think in July of 2010.
That sounds about right. And it came out here in March of 2014, right?
April
2014.
14.
And that's pretty much the way it goes. I mean, especially with picture books, but even with novels, like, it takes time to get the book in the best shape it can, to assemble all the sales and marketing materials, to craft that whole program, to get it into all the bookstores, to get reviewers to read it. The process of doing professional publishing is not a fast one, but I think once you go through it all, it can be very satisfying. So you've been pretty happy with how your publication has gone, right?
I've been absolutely thrilled with it. I believe the choices that Erdmans made in terms of the illustrator, the book design, even down to the font. It's so exciting just to see your work that's all within your own head become this wonderful group collaborative project.
That really brings it to life and makes it even better.
In ways you never even imagined.
Yeah. Woohoo! So going back to this query letter here, I would just note what this letter did not provide. This letter did not give me a description of the story, its premise, its stakes, or its climax, any of those things, or its characters. I don't know who the main character of Wizard Magic High is. It did provide a sense of the voice, or what I imagine is the author's voice, and that irritated me in its presumptuous intimacy and its unprofessionalism. It did not provide any relevant background about the author. I don't know anything about this lady except she irritates me, this Missy Stenograss. And finally, she didn't offer any sense of why the manuscript or her would be right for my publishing house. You know, sometimes it's obvious from context why something would be right for the publishing house. I've written a young adult novel and, you know, you publish young adult novels. So it ought to be totally clear. But I think what I'm really looking for is kind of a sense of, I'm going to come back to this word values or sensibility, and that our sensibilities are a match, the author's and mine. And if that isn't necessarily emerging from the letter, then I'd love to see how what you say about your book that shows me that those things line up, that you really value beautiful writing, that you really admire gorgeous and fresh illustration, like, say, the S.D. Schindler's for Brother Hugo and the Bear. All of those sort of things really help set up why this manuscript and me as an editor or Scholastic or Erdmans or whatever it is would be a great match. And so that's really useful to include. So to show you how this is done right, we're going to walk you quickly through Katie's good query letter. You want to go for it?
So this is a query letter that I worked hard on. I drafted it. I wrote it. I rewrote it. I showed it to friends. I showed it to you.
Yep.
And it was a similar process to the manuscript itself. But I think the thing to remember is you shouldn't let it slow you down in submitting the manuscript. Make it as professional and as good as you can, and then don't stress out and send it off.
Which is basically also the same thing as a manuscript, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, you get it the best you can, and then you let it go. Yep. So,
dear Ms. Erdmans, in the 12th century, Abbot Peter the Venerable of Cluny wrote to his friend Guijo, prior of the La Grande Chartreuse, and asked to borrow the Chartreuse copy of the Letters of St. Augustine, because Cluny's copy had been eaten by a bear.
So as an editor reading this, I would respond by thinking, huh, that's funny. A book got eaten by a bear. And what an interesting setting, you know, and that this is a true story. So I am intrigued by this first line, which is all a first line needs to do in either manuscripts or letters. I would want to read on just based upon the humor and the sensibility that I see here.
Inspired by this story, I have written Brother Hugo and the Bear, a humorous 1,141-word picture book text for ages 5 to 9.
I'm going to pause you right there. So right up front, she has put in her title. She has told me what kind of genre this is, that it's a picture book text. She's told me that it's a funny picture book, which accords with the humor of the bear eating the book. She's told me who her target audience is, ages 5 to 9, and she has given me the length, 1,141 words. So I know that it's within the bounds of picture book writing, and she knows what she's doing. So in that one sentence, she's provided me with all the correct frame I need to read the rest of this letter and to understand it in the way that she wants me to understand it. And well done.
Thanks. Then I go on to flesh out what Brother Hugo and the Bear is. After losing the original book in the woods, Brother Hugo, a monk of Cluny, attempts to reconstruct the missing manuscript, all the while being trailed by a hungry new friend who thinks that the words of St. Augustine are truly far sweeter than honey.
So there is that one sentence description that tells me a couple of things about it. First of all, you have losing in quotes, which sort of, you know, continues the humorous tone that this is a sort of dog ate my homework sort of thing. You have the key action that he's attempting to construct the missing manuscript. The hungry new friend. That sounds very child book-like, you know, so I think you have the right tone here. And the words of St. Augustine are far sweeter than honey. Like, that's just a lovely, like, it's like a nice turn of phrase. And that connects back to what your book is about. And so with all that together, I'm like, all right, I am still reading this. I am still very interested because this person can put words together and she's just provided me with all the information I need, or most of the information I need about the book.
This is a submission exclusive to Erdmann's Books for Young Readers because I feel Brother Hugo and the Bear would complement your list of picture books attuned to the medieval spiritual world and its modern fascination, such as Ruth Sanderson's Two Saints volumes and Ruth Ashby's and Bill Slavin's Kidman's Song.
And this is what I was talking about in the evil query letter with us about a sense of sensibility and how that was missing from the evil query letter. Like, she has just pretty much nailed it here. Like, my book fits in with your books, and you cited specific titles, which is always really useful in letting us know how books fit together.
To do that, I actually went to Erdmann's Books for Young Readers website, and I looked through their back catalog, and I starred and wrote down the titles of several books that caught my eye and I thought might be good complements to my book.
And if you don't have books that are so much like exact matches subject-wise, it's still possible, like, if you read a couple of novels or see a bunch of screenplays and you have a sense that the sensibility of the writer is similar to the sensibility that your work has, find out who those agents are. Find out who the editors are who edited those novels and query them and say, like, I read your book, Grasshopper Jungle, and my book is similarly about grasshoppers taking over the world, or except, you know, mine aren't click beetles, and a young woman's coming of age. That was a crazy example. But I work with a wonderful novelist named Neil Connolly, who queried us after reading the first book our imprint ever published, which was called When She Was Good. And that was just, he read that book. He saw there was a literary seriousness and a respect for language and for coming-of-age stories that really matched what he was doing. And we published his first book, St. Michael Scales, a couple of years later. Do your research. Read widely, read carefully, see what's out there. And then try to find those people. Oh, I should also add that, like, if you need to find specific editors, you can look at acknowledgments pages. You can look at Publisher's Lunch to try to find, or the Publisher's Marketplace to try to find agents who represent specific authors. If you're a member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, they have a edited by page that will help you get a sense of specific authors. And, you know, there are a lot of editors and agents on Twitter. You could feel free to query one of them. You know, if somebody sent me an at message saying, like, do you edit Francisco Stork? I would be like, yes, I do. And I'm very proud of it. You know, so we always love an opportunity to talk about our books and our authors. So there's lots of good opportunities for research here.
To wind up the last third of the letter, I bring it back to what I'm trying to do with this manuscript. Brother Hugo introduces the lively friendships of the 12th century Renaissance and the thirst for the word of God in manuscript to young readers with simplicity and humor. It also offers a monk's eye view of the complete medieval bookmaking process, all the way from sheep to shelf. Might I possibly send you the full manuscript?
This just continues being great, both in sort of summarizing what she's trying to do. And she offers a sales angle here without saying it's a sales angle. When she talks about the complete medieval bookmaking process, like, that's something that kids often study in school or can learn about at various points in their careers. And so the fact that it offers this monk's eye view is a great little insight and a great additional sales hook. And then she completes it with a very polite and matter-of-fact question, which makes the point of the letter clear. It's like the climax, kind of.
One of the things about being a writer is that you often get your influences from a lot of people. And my doctoral supervisor in graduate school came up with the phrase from sheep to shelf. And I thought it was such a great phrase. I wanted to drop it in here to talk about medieval bookmaking. And so I just want to give a shout out to Leslie Smith of Harris Manchester College, Oxford.
So you're going to next paragraph?
Mm-hmm. I am currently the V.H. Galbraith Fellow in Medieval History at St. Hilda's College, Oxford University. Although this August, I will begin a position as Assistant Professor of History at Southeast Missouri State University. I am also a former professional children's literature reviewer and writer for Riverbank Review and Kirkus Reviews.
So this paragraph was important to me because as a editor, I would then know that, hey, she really knows what she's talking about with this medieval history stuff. And she has connections, you know, to the medieval historians who could proofread it or to people who could, not proofread, but, you know, fact check it or something. Which they did. Or perhaps, help publicize it, you know, that maybe we get written about medieval publications. And the fact that she's a former professional children's literature reviewer indicates to me that she also knows something about picture books. She also has a sense of standards here and of what's being published in the field. And all of those things really come together. If you're just writing a novel or a book about a dog or something, then you may not have, you know, specific qualifications like this. And that's fine. You could just say, you know, I'm a teacher. I mean, if you have a connection to children's literature, it is nice to say I'm a teacher or I'm a reviewer or I'm a librarian, something like that to sort of place yourself within the context. But if you don't have specific qualifications like this, you could actually just send the letter at May I send you the full manuscript and leave it at that. We are perfectly happy to have writers who whose fabulous imaginations and great sense of wordplay and language is their number one qualification for being writers. So don't worry about this. If you don't have specific things to say.
Your writing will speak for itself.
Indeed. So let's wind this baby up.
Thank you for your time and consideration. I look forward to hearing from you. I have enclosed a self-addressed stamped envelope for your reply. The end.
The end. Very nice. Very professional. Well done. I would request your manuscript.
At the very end, I just get as professional and as simple and straightforward as possible.
Yeah. And you included a self-addressed stamped envelope as the guidelines requested, because after do your research, the second rule is always follow the guidelines.
Follow the directions.
And the third rule is be polite and professional. And the fourth is, but don't be uptight. You know, just be relaxed. Pretend you're going to a party and you don't want to antagonize anyone, but you just want to put your best foot out there and talk about your manuscript in that way.
Right.
Yep. I'm going to talk a little bit here briefly about synopses, because this is something that comes up a lot. People ask me, like, what is a synopsis and how am I supposed to write one? And it's often something that people ask to include in a query letter. After I speak at conferences, I ask people to send a query letter, two chapters of their manuscript, and a synopsis of the rest if you're writing a novel, which can sound like a lot, but those are all useful pieces in different ways. When I'm looking at a synopsis, what I want to see is one page, single spaced. You can go on to two, but if your novel's that long, but I sort of balk at anything more than two in an initial query. If you're writing on a proposal, then it could go longer. Everything here is really individual and depends upon what you're doing, but these are just my general guidelines for an unsolicited synopsis. I'd want to see one page, single-spaced. You do not have to include every event in the book. I tend to think of synopses as like slightly stretched out flap copy. And I want it to sort of echo the tone that is set up in the query letter. So if, for instance, if somebody had pitched me a humorous YA novel, I'd want to see that sense of humor coming through in the events described in the synopses. In the first paragraph, I'd expect to see sort of a character and general situation set up very much in the voice of the manuscript. Like, what is this book about? Who is it happening to? In the second paragraph, I'd want to see the inciting incident and its consequences. Now that we've had the general situation and we know the protagonist, what is happening to change things here and get the action started? In the third paragraph, I'd look to see a couple of escalating and complicating events and their consequences. And that can be the third, fourth, fifth, whatever it is, how long it goes along. Just tell me some of the things that occur so I get a sense of the action in the novel, whether it's as big as, like, is she going to ask him out? Are they getting closer? Or then aliens descend to Earth and slay everybody because she asked him out. It was very shocking. But the key thing is that I want to see the protagonist acting. I want to see the protagonist use the subject of a couple of these sentences and saying, Blink decides. And does various things. And then finally, after you've gone through as many of the escalating and complicating events as you need to, I want to see, in the final paragraph, I want to see a climax and a conclusion that shows me a sense of, that gives me a sense of the change that has happened since the beginning. You don't have to give away the, like, final twist or whatever it is. Like, it's kind of nice if I'm going to read the actual manuscript to not know exactly in detail. But I do want to see that all of this action is coming to a point, and I do want to have a sense of how things have changed to know that this manuscript is worth the time reading it, that we don't just end up back in the same place. That would be my quick guide to writing a novel synopsis.
How do you feel about writers who include copyright information about their manuscript or Writers Guild registration numbers?
This is one of those things that sort of falls under, like, telling me that you're going to make changes to your manuscript. In the sense that, like, anybody who works in a professional publishing house knows that manuscripts are under copyright and that we cannot steal ideas. And we know that if you're sending this to us, you have documentation that you have sent this to us. So I'm not going to violate your copyright by stealing your idea, because that would be legally stupid, as well as other morally stupid and every other kinds of stupid. So in that way, I don't really care about seeing this copyright notice. It seems a little bit redundant to me because I'm not going to do that.
What do you think about writers including sales figures or market information?
I think that's a little bit dodgy. If you have specific sales figures, perhaps you got them from BookScan or something like that. I don't really expect writers to provide specific numbers at the query letter stage. It's interesting to know, but sales figures are hard to come by, and if they're not your own sales figures, then they might be a bit tricky. And if they are your own sales figures, I don't think I need to know them at this stage again. Let's just keep the focus on whether on the artistic part of your book and whether that part of your book is right for me. And we can go on from there to figure out whether it's the right sales fit as well.
How do you feel as an editor when someone writes you a query letter and says, I give my book to this famous author and he or she loved it? Or I read my story to all the kids in my family and they said it was terrific.
I feel a little bit uncertain how useful that is, frankly. I mean, I do think it's nice to know that you've gotten feedback from your kids, especially if there are older kids who could, like, tell you when something is boring or something like that, or teenagers. But the personal context changes the reading, I think. You know, they might be just really happy just to have you spending time with them and reading. And children's book publishing is a specific thing where the books are not usually bought by the intended audience. It's one of the unique in the industry in that way. And so as a result, even if your book is loved madly by kids, it still needs to go past the standards of certain gatekeepers, like independent booksellers, like the buyer Barnes & Noble, like librarians and Roger Sutton at the Horn Book. So as a result, I think that's very sweet, but I don't necessarily think that an endorsement from kids in your life is going to sway my opinion a great deal. On the other hand, I will say if you have a writing mentor or someone who has agreed to, who has read your manuscript and worked with you on it, and this is somebody I would likely have heard of as one of those gatekeepers, or if they have agreed to blurb your book, that is useful to know, just because this does not mean that everybody should go out and contact all their famous writer friends. But that does provide that sort of gatekeeper sort of approval that would influence my own judgment about whether a manuscript is ready to go. And that's the same way I will say the agents. Like if I received a manuscript from an agent, then I know that agent is there and has provided that sort of sense, you know, the market's first look at what your story is and said, this is something new. This is something that would be right for you. So, and to conclude about query letters, the first rule I would say is beyond the other first rules I have prescribed.
Don't stress out.
Don't stress out. They're, like I said, going to a party, relaxing. It's a nice summer barbecue, you know, when somebody says to you, so what's your book about? It's simple as that. And think of it as introducing one great friend to another. Like, I have introduced my great friend Katie Beebe to all of you, and that was fairly easy. You can do the same way going back, right?
Yep.
Yep. So what really with query letters, what you want to do is concentrate on what you can control. You can control how good your book is. You can control the art of the book. Publishing is a big, wide thing that can be very confusing. So it's nice to have these sort of rocks in the waves, as it were, to grasp onto. And you can also control who your book goes out to. You know, you can control which publishers you select to, or which agents you think will give your book the best shot in the market. And, you know, don't obsess over this. maybe, like I would say, after you complete your manuscript, give yourself a month, let's say, to write a query letter, to do all the research, whatever it is, and then get it out there. You know, at least send out a first wave, see what kind of responses you get back, and go from there.
You can also control how professionally you present it. Make sure there are absolutely no typos. Everything is as spot on as it can be.
That your tone sounds right, that it's a professional tone. And that means really, like, the same way with your manuscript, you don't want to just send it out blind. You might want to go ahead and get a second read on your query letter as well. Give it to both a friend who is in publishing and, or, you know, who is working in the work, a fellow writer working, and give it to somebody who has nothing to do with publishing and or is not really interested in books even, and see how they each respond to your letter.
Often those second people who have nothing to do with the profession have the most innocent questions. They don't assume things, right. And they can give you a really clear sense of how you're presenting yourself.
Did you work with anybody in that way?
Yes, I made sure that I had people who were completely unconnected with writing look at my letter as well.
Wonderful. So, Katie, thank you very much for being here today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
It's been very fun. Thank you.
Katie's book is called Brother Hugo and the Bear. Her name is Katie Beebe, B-E-E-B-E. The New York Times called it educational, wry, and interesting, which, you know, There's a professional endorsement for you. And illustrated by S.D. Schindler. And this has been another great episode of The Narrative Breakdown. If you've enjoyed this episode, then we hope you might consider contributing to the Narrative Breakdown fundraising drive. James and I are accepting donations that might enable us to do this on a more regular basis. And you can find that on the Narrative Breakdown website at www.narrativebreakdown.com. Thank you again for listening to The Narrative Breakdown.
Narrative. Breakdown. Narrative. Breakdown. Narrative Breakdown.